The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Ecclesiastes 1, and I'll only read the first 6 verses. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. I'd like to now introduce our speaker, Al Stewart. Al has a business background in marketing. He's worked for many years in Christian ministry. He now works for the City Bible Forum as a national communicator. He regularly speaks around Australia and throughout the world. And you can follow him on Twitter at Baldy Pastor. I'm not quite sure why he's chosen that, but please welcome Al Stewart.
Thanks, Rob. Well, good afternoon. I wonder if you could cast your mind back all the long distance to this morning when the alarm went. Remember what happened? If you're like me, kind of the alarm went, you lie there and think, kind of the brain switches on, you think about what's on for the day, you kind of get up, stagger into the shower, or if you're an early morning exerciser, you're out and done whatever it is, you find that cup of coffee and then it's catch the tram or the train or whatever it is into work. In a few years' time, how much do you reckon you'll remember this morning? Unless something particularly happened. My guess is not much at all. Woody Allen says, I think it's 90% of life is just turning up. And that's true. Have you seen the old movie? It's getting pretty old now, but if you haven't seen it, it's a classic. Groundhog Day? Do you want to just kind of nod? If you haven't seen it, it's basically about Bill Murray as a weather forecaster, and he's caught in this kind of time warp thing where he repeats the same day over and over and over again. You get a certain age in life and it feels that way, that life is just the same thing over and over again. If you're an average person, you sleep 7 hours a night. In the last year, you've slept 2,500 hours. But you'll still get tired tonight. You've eaten about 1,000 meals in the last year, but you'll still get hungry tonight. If you shower twice a day, what's that? A bit over 700 showers a year, but it's around and around it goes. And you know what? Most of life is so dull, we can't even remember it in the future. But the good news is you'll be able to get to 65 and then move to the Mornington Peninsula what will you do? Well, you'll start eating dinner about 3 in the afternoon, lunch about 10 a.m. and breakfast the night before. Right? And is it any wonder that people grab hold of distractions like sport? Okay, now I'm from the other place up there. I'm a rugby union fan, but is it any wonder people here grab hold of AFL? Why? Because it's a distraction. It's just something to be distracted with. Or some people grab, it's about food or and so on. Is it all just Groundhog Day? And what's the meaning or purpose of it all? Now, people have asked that for millennia. You know, the philosophers have wrestled with it. It's a favourite topic for comedians. You remember, Monty Python and the Meaning of Life, or Douglas Adams wrote that great Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and so on. So how do you make sense of it? Now, there's a book in the Old Testament called Ecclesiastes, part of the Bible that Rob just read for us. It really wrestles with that idea. Let me tell you where it fits. I don't know if you're familiar with the Bible. You know, there's the Old Testament before Jesus and the New Testament after Jesus. In the Bible, the Bible's basically one big, long story from Genesis to Revelation. But in the middle of it is a section called the Wisdom Literature. Here, I'll show you. The wisdom literature's how do you try and make sense of things in life? Okay, so it stands apart from the big story to kind of walk you through a number of different books. The Song of Solomon, or sometimes called the Song of Songs, is basically just a big, long love poem. The love between a man and a woman. Now, it's not particularly logical, but what would you expect? Okay, it's a celebration of love. Proverbs is about kind of the way the world should work, kind of cause and effect. If you're wise, things will go well. If you're foolish, things will go badly. Okay, that's pretty much Proverbs. But the book of Job is about the fact that it's not always that simple. Sometimes really good people suffer. Why? Why do the innocent suffer? Is what the issue of that Job is wrestling with. And Ecclesiastes is asking the question of what gives life meaning and purpose? What really matters? What really has value? Well, if you want to follow in your program, or it'll be on the screen, let me just give you an intro to this book. And my aim is to try and get you to read Ecclesiastes. It's only 12 short chapters, so I'll see if I can motivate you to read this. It begins like this. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Ecclesiastes comes from a Greek word, the idea of someone who teaches in the assembly, a big group gathered together and someone who teaches them. And it's written, so he says the words of the teacher, son of David. It's written either by King Solomon, about 950, 1000 BC, or through the eyes of Solomon, someone kind of putting on Solomon's glasses and writing about it. And what does he say as he begins to look at life? Well, verse 2. My assistant's a bit sleepy here, but he means well. Okay, verse 2. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Now, what? That word meaningless, it's a translation of a particular Hebrew word that it's hard to kind of get the gist of it in English. Older translations of the Bible went for vanity, in the sense that it's all in vain. What the Hebrew word is, I don't know how you pronounce it exactly, but it's hebel, which means a mist or a vapour. It's the idea that something that's there, and then it's gone. You know, fog over the water on a cold morning, and you come back in an hour and it's gone. Or on a cold morning you breathe out and the mist comes out of your mouth and then it's gone. And he's saying life's like that. Life disappears. You can't hold on to it. It doesn't last. It's a vapor. In fact, the fact that meaningless is the idea of a kind of a the two plurals together means it's the most that way. You may have heard, if you're familiar with the Bible, the Holy of Holies was the most holy place in the temple, or the Song of Songs was the most beautiful song, and so on. Or if you're not quite so cultured, do you remember the movie Dumb and Dumber? It's a kind of like really dumb. It's that anyway. Okay, meaningless. And so he sets out to try and make sense of life. Here's how he frames the question. The whole book's like a quest to find an answer. And here's how he frames the question in verse 3. Okay, what do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? And now the gain idea—that's a kind of a commercial term. It's the bottom line. You know, you work really hard. You know, you come to work day by day. You put in the hours. What's the bottom line? What's the value? What is it that we've got? What lasts? And that little phrase "under the sun," if I can, you know, if you're motivated to read the book, you'll find that I think it's 27 times he uses that. Now, what does he mean? Little unusual for the Bible. What he means is this. If you just looked outside under the sun, nice sunny day here today, if you just looked out under the sun, and if you just had your common sense and what you saw, how would you make sense of life? It's as if you close the rest of the Bible and we've just got our common sense and what we see about life, how would you make sense of it under the sun? So let's have a look around and have a think about it. And that's what he does. He begins, you see in the rest of the chapter, he looks at, okay, life seems like it just slips through our fingers, like it's meaningless, like it's a vapour. Well, under the sun, how do we make sense of it? And here it is. He has a little bit of a look. So, verse 4, generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. What's his point? We are so insignificant in terms of time. Our lives are so short. You know, we argue about, you know, who owns which piece of property or whatever, or even the whole kind of land rights thing. You know, it's just and you should be concerned about it, but we're only here for such a little time. So Kathy and I took our kids to Uluru. Fantastic thing, although when we were there, the hardest thing about the outback there was finding a parking space. But we got an Aboriginal guide, took us around Uluru for a couple of hours and told us about a whole lot of stuff. And he said, they call the tourists who turn up there ants, as in, you know, insects, A-N-T-S, ants. I thought, funny, why? And then we went into the tourist centre, and they've got a video of tourist buses arriving, and it's sped up. And you can see it. People arrive, and they jump out, and they're all around, and then they climb up the rock, and then they climb back, and they jump through them, and they're gone. And it's that kind of frantic activity, like someone's kicked the top of an ant's nest. And the one thing is, in the video, the rock doesn't move at all. And so many of our lives, you know, so much of our lives are like that. We are, if I could say, get a little rhetorical, we are bugs hitting the windscreen of eternity. Our lives are so short. And empires come and go, you know, Rome and Egypt, and I've, you know, go to Egypt and you become a tourist and you... But it's all gone now. The 20th century was obviously the American century. The 21st century, well, you can fill in the gaps. He's saying the world goes on and on and on. So verse 5, the sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes. Now, he's not talking about the consistency of nature, which is a good thing. Interesting, the Bible says that the consistency of nature comes from a God who is reliable and stable and so on. And in fact, you make a very good point that it's that belief in the consistency of nature that comes from a God like that that led to the rise of science out of the Western world. But that, maybe that's for another day. But what he's saying here is it just goes on and on and on, and it's kind of endlessly predictable, and it just kind of, you know, one way and then the other way, and there's a high pressure system and then a low pressure system, and it's all, it's Groundhog Day. And you sleep and you eat and you do the washing or you mow the lawn, and it's all around and around, and we're only here for 5 minutes, and guess what? We get bored. True. See, the next verse he talks about. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. I think what he's saying in verse 8 is, all things are wearisome, more than one can say. You can get bored with anything. Anything. I'll give you a couple of examples. We took our kids on holidays to Magic Mountain in the USA. Anyone been there? World's biggest roller coaster park. And these massive... I'm a wimp. I don't want to pay money to make myself sick. I just held their bag. But my daughter is a roller coaster junkie, and she was bouncing up and down in the car park with excitement as you couldn't wait to get on these massive things. And when you see the staff who work in a roller coaster park, they're really excited too, day by day, right? No, they're not. Okay, they're not. They're in America, they're bored and polite. And when you go to an Australian amusement park, it's almost the same. The staff are just bored, okay? But it doesn't matter where. The most exciting thing. For me, the most exciting thing you could do probably would be barramundi fishing. So on the same kind of holiday thing, there's long service leave. We're in Darwin. I pay all this money to go barramundi fishing with a fishing guide, my daughter, and it's early morning. We're on the Adelaide River. There are two or three big crocs on the bank, not 50 metres away, watching us. We're in the boat, and the tide's running the right way, and the fish are on. And my daughter's hooked up a big barramundi that's kind of almost jumped into her arms. I've caught a salmon. It was all happening. My hands were shaking with excitement. And I just happened to look over at the fishing guide, and guess what? He was bored out of his brain. Why? Because for him, just another day at the office. Yeah? Now you think of people who love things like that, and whatever, you know, it's the golf nut who opens a golf shop and then spends all their day sitting behind the counter bored out of their brain. Or the fishing shop, or the... Everything can become boring, is what he's saying. Or the eye never has enough of seeing, or the ear has enough of... nor the ear its fill of hearing. What do you reckon he means? We just have this restlessness about things we want to see. So people get the travel bug, and they want to travel. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? That when you've got the travel bug, if you travel, that cures it, right? No, it actually makes it worse. And so as soon as someone comes home from one trip and they've tortured you with their photographs, they can't wait to go again and again, and it just, the travel bug actually grows. Or you can take something something as kind of bland as television. I'm old enough to remember before we had a television. So when we were a little kid, I remember the TV arriving. You know, it's this big, it's black and white. We had a remote control method in our house. That is, my dad would say, "Hey, get up and change the channel." All right. Didn't have an electronic remote control, and there wasn't anything much to watch. Then we went to like four channels, 24 hours. Not a lot to watch. Now we've all gone digital. How many digital channels are there? 15, 20, something like that. Okay. But you sit down with the digital, nothing to watch. I'm a football fan. Like, I love my rugby up there. And so we got Foxtel, and now there's 40, 50 channels. And guess what? Nothing to watch. That's right. But it's just, it's never enough. The year it's full of hearing. Did you know I did the research? Since 1940, in 1940, it was actually possible to record, electronically record songs. And since then, 2,100,000 popular songs have been published. 2,100,000 songs. You know, think, why do we need more songs? Why can't we actually just say stop? That's enough. Because the obvious thing was that every good song was public, like finished in the 80s. There hasn't been a good song published since like the end of the 80s. Right? So is that, okay, well, maybe that's just me. But do we really need Australian Idol part, what is it up to now? 8, 9? Yes, we do. Why? Because the year never has enough. And so here's the great irony. You can get bored with anything, okay? And yet in the rat race, we constantly feel stressed. And here's what I achieved. What have you ever achieved it? I managed to be bored and stressed at the same time. Now, that's logically impossible, isn't it? But I manage it, bored and stressed at the same time. Now, he goes on to say, look, everything kind of goes in a big circle and there's nothing new. Let me show you verse 9. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new. It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. Now, you might want to argue with that, but he's saying there's nothing new under the sun. So, you know, the economy rises and falls in a fairly regular pattern. And state and federal governments argue about who's to blame and who gets the praise, and pretty much it's just the regular pattern. And there's financial crises every so often. Oh, what about the GFC? Yeah, it was a big one, but there's been others that have been bigger, and it'll happen again, and so on. You might think, no, I'll tell you what's new. Technology. Technology's new, right, from the time of Solomon. Yeah, but try this way of looking at it. For the last however many thousand years, there's been this slow and inevitable rise of technology. How do you like this one? From the fishing net to the internet, from the steam engine to the search engine, and we get clever and clever, and everything can be done faster and faster, and yet it doesn't solve our problems. It doesn't stop us damaging one another. It doesn't stop us using technology for terrible things that you hear, and it doesn't stop greed and so on. Now, I bet you're glad you came and spent this lunchtime here, aren't you? Yeah? Okay. I just want to say, it's not that bad. It's actually worse, all right? Because you look at verse 11. No one remembers the former generations. Even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. So here's the good news. We'll be bored and stressed in our lives only the last 5 minutes, and no one will remember us. We'll just disappear. Think, oh, that can't be right. Okay, here's a little test. Okay, Rob, next one. Whoop, stop. Okay, now, don't say it out loud, please. Just see, does anyone know, just don't say it out loud, does anyone know who those four men are? Do you want to just kind of nod or raise your hand, or if you, 1, 2, 3. Okay, 3 out of 25, 4%, what's that, 3 out of 20, 10% of people? Okay. And the answer is? Prime Ministers of Australia. Okay, there we are. Now, you can be Prime Minister of Australia and within a century, 10% of people remember you. All right, well done. What's that say about what's going to happen to the rest of us? Even famous people disappear so quickly. Here's a photo of one of my boyhood heroes. You guys, probably AFL fans, no doubt, being a New South Wales boy, Jack Gibson was... if I said Jack Gibson was the Ron Barassi of rugby league, does that make sense? Brilliant, my hero as a schoolboy. A giant of a man. I got the privilege of meeting him. I was a chaplain of one of his teams. He died 3-4 years ago in Sydney. I showed his picture to a bunch of university students the other day. They didn't know who he was. Or what about this man? The guy on the right. Anyone know who he is? One, two, three. The same 10%. Well done, Prime Minister. Don Lane. When did he... Sorry? Yeah, being old. Interesting. He was kind of a national television celebrity, I suppose, in the 70s and 80s, and face everywhere, and he's been dead a few years now and just forgotten. But you think, nah, my family will remember me. Really? So we got to go to the Isle of Skye in Scotland, and it was in about March, and we found this tiny little stone cottage, and this is where my great-great-grandfather was born. And his wife, Janet, arrived in Australia in 1850 with six kids, aged 18 down to 3 or 4, something like that. And her husband had died on the voyage, and she arrived here with six kids, 1850, a widow. And you know what? I didn't even know that she existed until 2 or 3 years ago. And I tell my kids about their great-great-great-grandmother, and their eyes glaze over and they wander out of the room. They don't want to know. Do you think anyone remember you? That's the point he's making. So here we go. Here's the good news. You ready? The earth goes on and on forever. We're only here for 5 minutes. It's boring while we are, and no one will remember us. Hello. You've missed out on a whole lot of depression here. Now, it's interesting. Don't get depressed, because Ecclesiastes is actually a positive book. But what he's saying is, it's good for us to take a step back and have a really hard look at life. We get so busy, and we can be so kind of just busy in the rat race that we stop and actually, like we don't stop and have a hard look. And I notice people have the headphones in and they're listening to music and so on all the time, and we never stop and think. And that's what he's saying to do. Now, it's interesting, James in the New Testament, who is the brother of Jesus, writes this. Listen to what he says about us and our lives. He says this in James chapter 4. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. And that's the way it is. But there's a question, isn't it? Why do we feel like there should be more? And most people you talk to think there should be some kind of meaning or purpose there. There should be more than just that. Bugs hitting the windscreen of eternity, why, we seem to be made for more than just that. Where does that come from? Do you know that frustration, that sense of meaninglessness, that yearning that we have, the Bible says actually that comes from God. And that feeling of frustration that God's put that on our world. In your program there on the right-hand side is a little quote from the book of Romans. Romans is the Apostle Paul, great Christian teacher, wrote to the Christians in Rome in about the year 60, something like that. And look at what he says. I just want to show you one verse here before I pull up. He says, for the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, meaning by the will of God. Now that word frustration, interesting word. The New Testament is written in Greek, the Old Testament written in Hebrew. But when they came to translate the Old Testament, into Greek so everyone outside of the Israel and so on could read it. That's the word they used for meaningless, meaningless. The Greek word metaiotes is the same word as the Hebrew word hebel. The idea of its frustration, meaningless, and so on. That kind of, that frustration that we feel. And why has God done that? God's put that on our world. Why? As a response of us walking away from him. That we've ignored God, that we've walked away from him, that we mess up our lives, we ignore him and damage one another. And you know, that pain in our world starts as early on as Genesis chapter 3. And Genesis chapter 3 is this great explanation of why the world's the mess that it's in. And God's put this on our world, that feeling of frustration, why? To push us towards, well, to look for hope and to look for an answer. Now, the rest of Ecclesiastes, I've got 2 minutes to finish. Let me just tell you. The rest of Ecclesiastes is about Solomon's quest, his search to find something that has real permanence, real meaning and substance. And he'll say, the people of our world, because we're driven to find meaning or purpose, people try and find it in all sorts of different things, in making money or in chasing pleasure or in partying or great achievements or aesthetics or success or good looks, fashion or sex, all sorts of different ways. And what Solomon does is he goes and looks at each of those things. And the test he applies is this: what really lasts? What really has value and so on? And it's like almost like people hide in straw houses and he comes and blows them down one after another. So that's why I'd encourage you to read it. Because you know what? This is probably it's my favourite book in the Bible. Why? Because it's good for us to ask the question. It's good for us to ask the question, what am I living for? Will it really last? Does it really have value? Or will it be found ultimately to be a vapour?
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.